The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company.
Every week, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, that dumb fish who doesn't trust his gut, Paul Dana Jr., and Fletcher Page take you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium.
We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP, the Bengals Beat podcast, presented by 50 West Brewing Company. As always, we are your beat writers for Cincinnati.com and the Cincinnati Inquirer, Paul Dana Jr., Fletcher Page, here with you. What's up?
I just want to get right to it.
You do?
I do. I want to talk about...
You're anxious.
Well, I want to talk about...
You showed up ready to go.
Well, a lack of preparation.
On your part?
Poor approach. Terrible execution. I'm talking about the fact that I didn't eat a single rib.
You're going right in?
I'm going right to that. You thought I was talking about 45-10. I'm talking about zero, which is the amount of ribs I consumed in Kansas City.
And the amount of ribs that I consumed. It was a soccer match. It was 0-0. No ribs consumed. We were screwed by Joe's. Mm-hmm. Closing on Sundays. Who knew? How can that place close on Sundays? It's the weekend. Who doesn't want to fill up on ribs right on a Sunday?
Before a primetime football game.
Heartland. Bible Belt.
We miscalculated that.
We really did. It's something we should have looked into because we could have eaten there on Saturday night, but instead.
I had visions of getting straight off the airplane on Saturday afternoon and going ahead and getting five or six in early. I was going to tweet out the photos of the bones. Mm-hmm. I was coming for your family.
I know. Now, so that's why in the open still exists. It's a carryover, essentially. So it hangs with what it was before, with me being a gutless fish. You should know, at the airport breakfast on Monday morning on no sleep, I asked our waitress if there's a possibility I could get a single rib. I wanted that 1-0 win, like true soccer style. Aroo. I wanted it. And she informed me that they did not, in fact, sell ribs until 10:30. And unfortunately, that's where we were at. And I said, oh, Fletcher has a later flight. He might be able to sneak a rib in on me.
That's right.
But you did not. So 0-0. So it moves forward. So a bet will pop up at some point during this podcast that we will run forward to next week to see who gets made fun of in the open.
I think trying to eat a rib in an airport at 8 a.m. is about as low as it gets in life.
So not when it comes to trying to win a bet.
That's right.
Okay. So sad state of affairs on Trip Report that we did not have. Also sad state of affairs about the Bengals, which we will dive into. A lot to get to after 45-10, which we dove a lot into the game and the walkout. There's a lot of fallout from this, and a lot of very interesting topics, in my opinion, going forward as the Buccaneers are on the plate this week and then bye week, right at the midway point. A lot of players talking about how big of a game this is and being pretty open about it. Some interesting things that came of Monday's team meetings that we got some good information on. Trade speculation. Who's ready for trade season? And the Bengals need to. Tight end trade is on the horizon. Has to be with the situation they're in at that position right now, with Mason Schreck now going down as well. So they're going to have to figure some things out there. We'll dive into who that could be, what that could be. We need to talk about the offense, which is going the wrong way the last 3 weeks. We'll dive into some of those numbers and some of the things said by offensive coordinator Bill Lazor. Tyler Boyd admitting, he's like, that was the theme of the meeting Monday, was our offense is declining, you guys are regressing. And we'll take a look at where that's happening. Your three questions, of course, and bets for next week's Open. All on our plate today. Unlike ribs, there is a lot on our plate.
Certainly. I think on the walkout, we were so consumed with the defensive performance. And, you know, we later got the confirmation just how bad it was with 18 missed tackles, which is the most in a game for the Bengals since 2006 at least. It's as far back as the stats go.
As far back as PFF tracked it.
Right.
Has tracked it.
But we did sort of gloss over the offense, which...
which was probably more the problem because, you know, when we talked about how they're going to have to win this game, I mean, the defense was atrocious. The offense was atrocious. I mean, we thought, well, they got to win this game 37-36 like Atlanta, right? I mean, that was sort of the thought. Now, granted, Kansas City had 38 5 minutes into the third quarter. So they took the foot off the pedal at that point and showed a little mercy.
Yeah, one of those numbers is more of a surprise than the other, though, to your point. I mean, if you would have told me that Kansas City, you did tell me. You took the over on 38 points, right, on this podcast last week, that Kansas City was going to score more than 38.
Yeah, and they looked like they were about ready to score 75 if they had kept the hand
right
down.
So, I mean, we kept saying this is going to be a race to 40. So, it's not really a surprise that they ended up above. But 10 points?
Yeah.
15 first downs?
Yeah, that's really where the issue is. And if you look back, so, you know, we talked a lot about this, and I think it's gone under the radar because people were excited. You know, they beat Miami, and the offense had the drive to potentially win the game. And so we're so consumed. We've been so consumed with how bad the defense has been, and that's deserved. It has been this trend. I think it's now really a real trend. It's not something that you can gloss over the first 4 weeks, because that Eifert injury was huge. The offense was loving the three tight end package. They're loving what Tyler Eifert was bringing to them. He was so dynamic. He was that third option, right? Boyd has stepped up. So you have AJ and Boyd. You know, your running game has been generally consistent, although maybe not used enough. But without Eifert and without Gio, and you had Mixon out for a little bit in there too, you run into this where they don't have enough weapons, and the offense has taken a dive. So weeks 1 through 4, here's their – this is a look at their drives. So the scoring percentage on drives week 1 through 4, 46.5%. Great number, near the top of the league. Weeks 5 through 7, 26.7%. So all the way down to 26%. Touchdown percentage weeks 1 through 4, 35%. Great percentage. Helped by when they were getting down there, they were cashing in, number one in the red zone. And they've still done pretty well in the red zone. TD percentage weeks 5 through 7, 16.7%. All the way down. I mean, these numbers are cut in half from what they were. Punt percentage was 28% weeks 1 through 4. Now half the time, 50% they're punting. So those are real. It's 4 games versus 3 games. And there were bad defenses in both sides, okay defenses in both sides. That wasn't a thing where, like, oh, well, that was just a tough stretch of defense. Kansas City has a terrible defense. Pittsburgh had a bad defense. Miami's okay. You know, there were some bad defenses in the front end.
Similar sample size. Samples.
I would argue the defenses were better. You had Baltimore.
Yeah.
Carolina has a pretty good defense. Yeah. And you were moving it on them. So the question is, why is this happening? What do you have a theory?
Well, I mean, they go to Atlanta, and Eifert, Ross, and Gio all get hurt. And Eifert's not going to play again this season. Gio hasn't played since, right? And and Ross hasn't been the same. That doesn't help.
Yeah. Boy, Ross. You know, they need him so badly right now.
They need the idea of what he's supposed to be.
He got one target, and he got bumped into, which, man, the team got waxed. They, no matter if they would have gotten every call, they still would have gotten waxed, but they really didn't get a lot of calls. And their receivers are just getting, AJ in particular, just getting held like nobody's business out there and just never seem to be getting a call. We asked Bill Lazor about it, right, in the in our meeting with him on Monday, and he just paused. Did we ever time the pause?
Pregnant pause.
What did we call it? We haven't timed it. It has to be 10 seconds where he just stops, and you can almost hear him thinking out loud in his head, what do I say here? And then he said, because I do have kids I need to send through college. I'm not trying to get any fines.
Right.
And he said his very politically correct answer. But, yeah, he basically said we told these guys there are a lot of calls that we would think that you would be getting, but you're not going to get them. It's apparent at this point in the season that you're not going to get them. So you need to be fighting through that stuff. Why they're not getting them, who knows? You know, what do you want them to do, go flop?
Take a dive.
I mean, they've got to make a play. It's almost like if you don't take a dive, you won't get the call. Refereeing across this league has been inconsistent. It's favored the Bengals at times. It's gone against them. And in this particular area, it just seems particularly bad. Especially when you consider how many defensive holding calls we see against them.
Mm-hmm.
So Ross gets knocked over way down the field, and the one target ends up even a non-entity. I don't know. I just don't see a lot happening. AJ, Tyler Boyd, and teams are even doubling up on both of those two guys now and daring anyone else to beat them. And outside of C.J. Uzomah occasionally, no one is.
Yeah, and C.J.'s banged up too. So you took a room of tight ends where, you know, you're trying to figure out which one of them is going to be active. Now you're down three of the four, right?
Yeah, so, three or four. I mean, you have Uzomah and Fast Matt Langle, who you picked up off the practice squad from the Texans. You know, I mean, you know, he's a non-factor.
Right. I mean, that's such a punch in the personnel. All the plans.
A punch in the personnel.
Because all the – I just imagine just how somebody like Bill Lazor is probably thinking about just with Eifert, what they've lost. And I think we talked about sort of the trend – I remember tracking what had happened on drive since Eifert went down, and for some reason, that's in a notebook I've got somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And just thinking about the how severely limited that probably, what that probably did to the offense right there.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of John Brown not coming to fruition, John Ross, excuse me, not coming to fruition, too, is stunting, which by this point, I don't know what you're counting on there.
Yeah. God, they need him.
No, I mean, this
offense is. They actually need him though too.
Yeah,
he needs to be more than a damn idea.
Yeah,
and he's just not. And now, he came out of this game re-aggravating his groin. We'll see how serious that is. Josh Malone with the healthy scratch is in the doghouse. Auden Tate, for some reason, is getting waived.
Cody Core made a very difficult catch in
Cody Core redemption time, right? Cody Core is not the answer. He's not shown anything in the entire time he's been here as a receiver. I'm just
a gunner.
You know, and teams are obviously scouting that and seeing it. Look, you stop Boyd and you stop AJ, or at least you double AJ and you throw a little extra love on Boyd. I mean, teams were just straight doubling Boyd on third downs. Like, we know where you're trying to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is the league adjusting to Bill Lazor. This is the league seeing your new offense. It's all on tape now. You're scoutable. Whereas before, I think a lot of this stuff was so new.
Right.
And, you know, they just barraged Baltimore in the first half because there was a lot of stuff they didn't know. Baltimore didn't know what to expect. And when they realized, okay, we need to stop blitzing and trying to do that because they're going to burn us, they settled down there. And Atlanta was just bad. So you've got, to me, it comes down to, because we're back where we were last year. Although the offensive line is slightly better, the problem is you don't have enough other guys that can win. You have Boyd, but you need one. You definitely have to find one more. And, you know, CJ is getting matched up a lot with smaller DBs. And maybe they need to look for him more. But, you know, he's not Tyler Eifert. You know, so whether it's, you know, Erickson hasn't done anything. When he's come in and played a lot of extra snap, he hasn't done anything. You know, I don't know where else you look to at this point. They need somebody to stretch the field. His number is number 15, and him not ascending is just killing them, you know. And not having a – because before they could hide that with all the multi-tight end packages they were going to, but now they can't do that.
Right. And on – let's see, they were not good on third down again. 9 of the 13 third down plays they had with Andy Dalton and his quarterback were they had 4 yards or longer to go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just.
Yeah, they're putting themselves in tough spots, and you know, maybe they're not running enough. Perhaps they need to be just running the ball more. I mean, Mixon was 3.8, but he for the year has been pretty solid. I mean, perhaps they need to just be lining it up and trying to run it more. Tough to look at Sunday's game in that respect.
Yeah.
You get down so much.
When you're down 28. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's just not a lot you're going to do there. But as a whole, I think they need to be running the ball a little bit more and, you know, trying to make this the Joe Mixon show a little bit right now. You know he's an explosive weapon. I don't feel like they utilize him quite enough. You know, we didn't even see a single screen.
Right.
Like, finding – they need, you know, they're doing a good job of that, I felt like, early in the season, and now I don't feel like we're seeing as much. I think Joe Mixon has to be your other guy to really – make teams pay attention right now, because I don't see it anybody else that's going to be stepping up anytime soon.
Yeah, and that's where Cincinnati went on third down. Let's see, I'm just looking at this. They passed to him on the first third down. He made that one-handed catch.
Yep, which is a check down.
He had a run out of the shotgun that was good on the second one, but then after that, it just went downhill. Andy Dalton was sacked twice. They had two opportunities on a third down. That was a Bobby Hart penalty. Andy was sacked twice when they had the two chances on third down.
Yep.
And it just went downhill from there.
Yeah, I mean, and this has been a thing. You know, they've got to figure out something. So who knows? You know, Bill Lazor. You know, I find it. I want to bring in a little bit of Bill Lazor here, because he had some interesting things to say about the declining offense and message to players and some of his thoughts on why that is. So anyway, here's Bill Lazor.
I guess we can start. Obviously, you're frustrated by yesterday. The offense was really AJ heavy early. I mean, obviously, he's getting no best where it goes. Is that a sign that it's not going as well as you'd like? Because I know you'd liked you want it to be going all over the place.
I noticed it early, but I wasn't too concerned because the times that he got the catches, he was singled. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's more of an issue when he's not singled and we're not getting the ball other places. But I think the biggest problem, or I shouldn't say the biggest problem, we got problems when you lose like that. But I think that one of the key indicators is that we only made 15 first downs. And we talked as a unit this morning, or this afternoon, I guess. When you only make 15 first downs, you're not going to end up getting the ball down the field enough. You're not going to end up running the football enough. You're not going to end up doing anything enough, probably other than you'd say we got it to A.J. early. And, you know, A.J. got yards. But that's the key. And it was really the thing we talked about going into the game. The number one thing was make first downs. And we just felt like if we made first downs, we're good in the red zone. We'll finish the drive with touchdowns. And it was our least first downs that we've made for the year. So when you come out of it, it's hard to be happy about anything when you can't stay on the field. That's the indicator. And it's something we've got to get back going in the other direction, because early in the year we were making lots of first downs.
Do you need to get more out of the other guys, not AJ and Tyler in particular? I mean, you had injury, and I know that's hurt, but I mean, do you need more out of them right now?
Well, we went into this game expecting that we were going to get more out of the run game. We went into the game certainly expecting that the pass game would be spread around. So we were disappointed how those things both turned out, I would say. And then, again, when you only have so many first downs, then now you're standing over there watching instead of having a chance to get more of those other things going, like more runs, more down the field shots. We thought we would have had some of those connect in the game, and really we had one. It's hard to say what wasn't disappointing, really, after that kind of performance.
Did you put leaders responding today? Some of the guys.
Today,
some of the guys mentioned some guys stood up.
Yeah.
How they respond?
I felt like professionals, and I'm interested to get back to work Wednesday. That's the day that will tell. You know, I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful. I like this team. I like these players. You know, when you have a team that has proven like they have this year that they'll win the game at the end, that they'll be poised, that they'll be tough, that they won't quit, they're fun to work with. No one likes what happened yesterday. So let's get back to that other team.
You had three good pass catching tight ends at the beginning of the year, and now you've really got one. Mm-hmm. How much does that limit the different looks that you can show the opponent? Because you were playing a lot of multiple tight ends when you had them.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to make excuses. You know, you got to go with what you have, and personnel is a big part of that. And defenses look at who you are. I think in the NFL, they're very conscious of your personnel, and today they're dealing with who we have at the moment. So no excuses. We have plenty of good players to make yards and score points, and the other, you know, points, yards, first downs. I think it's very telling when you look at it that that's where we've hit our rut in the road right now, and we got to dig out of it, and that's the plan.
All right, so there's Bill Lazor. I mean, look, it'll be interesting to see as over the next few weeks, you know, where this offense goes. I mean, Tampa has a bad defense. New Orleans has a bad defense, but you know, so did Kansas City. So it should be very telling as they try to get this thing back together for a trip to Baltimore. That will be, you know, a lot on the line in there as well. So anyway, good to think about all this stuff. The interesting thing I think is the reaction, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is where this team was at, and you know, we heard from a couple of people about what was said Monday. And you know, I found it interesting. I hate like players only meeting, right? Like we got together and
leadership,
right? But I mean, it's needed right now. Something, and it doesn't happen all the time. And that players were standing up and in the all team meeting on Monday and sort of having a little heart to heart, I think. What you Southerners call it, come to Jesus moments. Isn't that
Yeah, well that 45-10 game was a bless you game. Bless it.
Is that a proper Southern analysis?
Bless your heart.
That was a bless your heart game. Yeah, you don't want one of those. But so, I mean, you get players. I don't want to overreact to that, but I do think that it's good to know that it happened.
Right. It's better than it not happening.
Better than it not happening. And I do think players legitimately care. I do think they have a pretty good leadership core. You know, so I think they're in good hands in that respect. And, you know, I thought the most... interesting thing I heard in reaction, whether after the game or Monday or Tuesday, was an admittance of how big this Tampa game feels.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the run they're on, because of the bye coming, and because how much this really, in a lot of ways, this game will decide whether your first half of the season was really a success or not. It's a totally beatable team. It was kind of a mess. They've already fired their defensive coordinator. They just lost their Quan Alexander. Like, they, you know, still thinking people like still like maybe Ryan Fitzpatrick should come back. You know, I mean they're still kind of there. It's a very winnable game. Bengals should be favored at home going into a bye. And admitting how big this is and that there really is a sense of that, I mean, this team is going to stew all week waiting to get back. I'm not going to go spoiler alert on the red child, the redheaded stepchild. I just took a couple.
You're smushed it together.
That could be. It could be the red child.
Red child.
By the way, post game video. Like I feel like I was Drew. I'm like, was I on something or was it just too late? It was past my bedtime. I had about 8 mispronunciations.
Are you not, went back and watched the film?
I went back and watched the tape.
Yourself?
I watched the tape, and you know, it was just bad performance. I feel like I played.
I don't even remember doing it.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be great if in a post-game interview, like, although it'd be believable in the NFL with the unfortunate concussion issues, if you just, like, on Monday were like, what do you think happened yesterday? I don't even remember. Did we play? What even happened? You know?
We were in a different time zone.
I looked like it. Way past my bedtime. Film was not good. Eye in the sky didn't lie. Multiple flubs.
Well, you just got to get better next week.
Got to get better next week. You know what? I'm going to be motivated to be better in next week's video. Anyway, to not steal from the stepchild later this week. However, I think they're going to just blow the Bucks away. I really do. This the same way I thought the Chiefs were going to hate. This was a buzzsaw. I feel like this is the opposite of that because of what's happened and because the Bucks not being super and. I really do. I think this sets up for them really well. It's a better matchup, everything.
Yeah, it's pretty wild how quickly the narrative swings in the NFL. Still a rookie, me. So just two weeks ago we were covering a 4-1 team that had a perfect platform to sort of proclaim itself as real. And now after dropping to the Steelers, not a meltdown, but then completely flopping against Kansas City, now we're sitting here talking about saving your whole season with a win over the Bucks.
Well, certainly setting yourself up. I don't know if it would save them. I don't think it makes a huge difference. I mean, I still look at the predictions from before the season.
They're right on.
It's right where we thought they would be. I you know, and I had them paced at 9-7, so they're currently paced at 10-6.
Right.
And we said they were, because they were so young, because they had new coordinators, that there was going to be a lot of adjusting, and they should be improving and playing a whole lot better at the back end of the year. And there's a lot of opportunity to stack wins.
Yeah, certainly.
I mean, look, let's
go back through it.
Let's just say, okay, so you beat Tampa Bay, which you should. You're 5-3. New Orleans, let's not even count that yet. Look, 2 against Cleveland, Denver and Oakland at home. 4, that should be 4 wins. Games that you'll be heavily favored against Oakland. You'll be favored against Denver. You'll definitely be favored against Cleveland at home, and probably favored at Cleveland. That'll be December 23rd. I mean, geez,
that's get you to 9.
I mean, that's 9 right there. So then you're just looking at Pittsburgh, and LA, and Baltimore, and New Orleans. How many of those can you get? One.
I mean, it would be pretty mildly surprising if they don't get to 10. If they win this weekend.
Yeah, but this is part of it. I mean, it's just this was the tough part of their schedule that they had to get through, those two games in particular. And so, you know, it seems like they're in a good spot. And if they get the – I mean, then at the end of the day, it comes down to Pittsburgh. So it's just – it's really hard. Somebody tweeted this to me the other day, and I said, I totally agree. I find it hard to find a way they aren't sitting at 9-6 playing the Steelers in week 17
right.
with everything on the line. It's the way it has looked to me since day one. I think it still looks that way, despite everybody being down on this team for getting crushed by Kansas City and not being able to beat the Steelers. They're still in a good place. They're still right there. Here's my analogy. And I'll stop talking for a second so I can It's not even an analogy. It's why I think what we learned. What have we learned? The first 5 weeks, we learned this team's floor. It's high. It has a pretty high floor for this season. They're not bad. They're definitely at the worst an average to maybe slightly above average team. That's who they are. They've beaten all the teams that are clearly below them. The last 2 weeks, we learned their ceiling. They are not. They are not a upper echelon. They are not a real contender this year. They, you know, nothing is going to happen that suddenly they're going to be able to, you know, contend with the New Englands and the Kansas Cities of the world. They're, the gap is too big. But there's room for movement in between there, and perhaps they could get closer to that. And, you know, I think the real – you judge this season – we talked about this on the walkout. You judge season success differently now, but I think we now know ceiling and floor. That's the demoralizing part about Sunday is you had hope that there wasn't a ceiling. Yeah, they're clear, and then there is. That's the demoralizing part about Sunday. But that doesn't mean they aren't still a very high floor team that is young and can get better and all of those things.
And can just get to the tournament and try to play a little bit.
See how that goes.
I know. I'm new.
Yeah,
but
you know,
just got to get there. Try it again.
But look, if they get there and win a game,
yeah,
dude, demons exercise,
monumental.
It absolutely. This season is a success. If they get to the playoffs and win a game, are you kidding me? Break the drought.
Right.
1991 is a long, stinking time ago, Fletcher Page. You were barely alive.
I was 4 years old.
Yes. 1990, January 91.
Just figuring out how negative the world really could be back then in 91.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. So anyway, I think that's a big part of it. I do want to bring in a little bit of CJ because I thought he was interesting, in particular talking about players stepping up and his view on how big this game is. So here's a little bit of CJ Uzama.
Yeah, he's a good player.
It's kind of a reality check for y'all. I mean, because it was rolling, and this is kind of really the biggest piece of adversity you guys have faced this year. Is this kind of a reality check of everybody needs to kind of?
Like, I think it's maybe a gut check. I think where we have to really dig deep and we have to come together. And this is the biggest game of the year. Obviously, I mean, it's the next game, and we always preach, you know, take it one game at a time. But this is a big game for us. And I think that, you know, how we approach this game, how we approach practice going into this game is going to be key. And, you know, we had our meetings today, and, you know, a few players got up and said things. And I think that's good for the team. I think it's good for the team to hear from the leaders and hear how, you know, we're going to approach this week and how we're going to approach this game and ultimately how that's going to, you know, lead to the success of our season. And we can't let the game that we just had. I mean, we played abysmally in all three phases. So, you know, we can't let that's gone. You know, Coach Hayes says, you know, you got the night to think about it. You got to come in the next morning with a fresh mind. And obviously, we're going to watch the tape, learn from it. But after that, it's on to the next week. So that's how we're going to approach this upcoming game and throughout the week. Yeah.
Does that happen often? A guy standing up and saying something to me, or is that kind of more of a rare occurrence?
It depends. It just depends on, I mean, it comes in different times. Obviously, this time is because of how poorly we played all the way through. But, you know, there are certain instances where, a team's playing really well and somebody also says that. So it isn't, I mean, obviously it's not a daily occurrence or a weekly occurrence. But, it is something that, you know, every now and then you need to hear as a team, for sure.
Do you think there's a huge – Were the guys in the offensive room or both? Was it both in the team? And
yeah, it was in the team, yeah.
Usually would be the typical – would be the guys we would think – Stood up and
So you think this is a? You guys think this is a huge game? I mean, it feels like a big deal because of the last 2 weeks and you got a bye coming. Is that part of it, or is it just?
It's because, you know, we've got a bye coming up, and we want to set ourselves up. You know, we're still, you know, do we still have the ability to attain everything that we want to attain, and, you know, in our division and. You know, moving forward, I mean, we're not even halfway done with the year yet, you know, so it's something where we're like, okay, well, we're going to take everything one game at a time. Sorry, I'm smiling because we're going to take it one game at a time, obviously. But I think that this is for me a very big and a staple game for us.
Yeah.
To assert ourselves and to get back on track. And to show that, you know, this was a blip. You know, the last two games were a blip, and we're going to get back to where we need to be.
It's huge schedule-wise, like you said. I mean, it could be you going to the bye, losing three in a row, and 4-4, or you get a win, 5-3, going to the bye. Life's totally different.
Yeah, we're sitting pretty, you know. Right. I mean, we're not sitting pretty, but we're right. sitting. We're
you'd
sitting.
Be you'd be sitting
yeah,
in first place.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. exactly. And that's what we want to be, and that's where we want to be. So, we're gonna have a. We're gonna have a fire under our ass. That's for sure.
All right, there's a little bit of CJ, who is just. We had him on BTS a couple weeks ago. I've always liked CJ. CJ's like from a scribe perspective. He was always one of those guys who you're like, man, I hope he gets really relevant and good because right. I'd love to have him be a go-to guy because he's just such a good dude, nice guy, insightful, thoughtful, you know. Textured, much like your hair.
That's right. Well, his parents his parents made him practice interviews when he was in high school. As a high school
got
recruiter.
Rid of those the ums and the likes. I think I could use his parents to come around and drop some of those on me every once in a while, and I think a lot of us could. A lot of us don't need to be saying like all the like time.
You trying to tell me something?
No. That it was not. Did I eyeball you in that? I didn't mean to. If I did,
no,
I did not mean to eyeball you.
You didn't.
We just generally out into the universe.
I remember that, CJ as a recruit, though. He was
yeah.
He was probably fielding a dozen calls just from us recruiting reporters back in the day.
Life is. Can you just?
I was a hustler.
Can you just tell me about what life is a recruiting? I remember what it was like. I didn't do it hardcore.
Let me tell you my first job, and you tell me if you would keep going in this industry.
No.
I shouldn't be here today.
I don't even need to hear
it.
The answer would be no,
first
no matter
job,
what you say.
First job I did was I took all the profile pictures that were on people's scout profiles. I took 650 on a Saturday at a combine one time. It was one horizontal, one vertical, move. One horizontal, one vertical, because the kids were just coming through. It was 650 of those.
Dude, that's
I
huge.
Did it for 10 hours.
For what was that for?
It was for
Georgia?
It was a scout.com combine in Atlanta, Georgia.
Wow.
And that was the job they gave me.
Now, were those dudes were told to come through there, or did
they
you
had,
have
was,
to?
You had to, it was registration.
Registration.
You signed your name, gave your paperwork, then you came to me. I
wow.
hit you twice, and they loved it because they wanted their photos on their profiles. We're not talking about five-star kids. We're talking about every single recruit that could possibly become a commitment. To even Furman gets a photo.
Hey.
Because of people like me.
Hey, easy on
I'm not,
Furman.
I'm not dissing the
Sam
Paladins.
Sam Weiss, Stanford Jennings,
that's
my
right.
man, Stanford Jennings.
I'm not dissing the Paladins, but but CJ Uzama already had a photo.
Yes.
I was getting all his teammates.
Yeah.
And I did all that, and I'm still here today.
And here you are. Look where you're at. Grinding your way up, still talking to CJ Uzama.
That's right where I started.
Right where you started. Well, that's like, I mean, I joke about covering Sean Williams' high school signing at Georgia in Early County. When I was working down in the middle of nowhere in Georgia. Sean Williams from our area signs with the Bulldogs. So I covered his signing day. I covered him at UGA when I moved up and started covering Georgia. And then he got drafted by the Bengals. And I was like, me and Sean Williams, man, we go way back.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk all about Nats.
He was a really good baseball player in high school.
Yep, he was. I mean, that those schools, if you are any kind of athlete, you
right,
play
you
every
better,
sport
yeah.
and both sides of the ball, potentially, it wouldn't matter what you're playing.
And if you don't ball out, your team lost.
Yeah. Him and Bakari Rambo
yeah.
were hilarious. They both were from that area
uh-huh.
and small schools, and they were both Georgia safety signees. And both the only real player on those teams.
I know we're really obscure here.
Yeah.
I think Bakari Rambo might have been one of the best football names you could have.
Oh, without doubt.
It's not even his real name. You yeah. know his birth name was Goo Fudge?
No.
That's real, man.
No.
That was what his born name was.
Wait. His last name is not Rambo, it's Fudge?
Yes, his name was, his nickname, well, his nickname. Was Goo.
His
so,
name was Goo.
So his name was Goo Fudge before he became Bakari Rambo.
Is there? Yeah, you can't be on more the farther on the side of the spectrum than that. Like, that actually is, you know how you have to write the markers? Like, on a scale from Goo Fudge to Bakari Rambo, where does your name rank? That's that is an unbelievable nugget. It makes me wish he was still in the league.
Yeah. Yep.
That should be on every broadcast he's ever been a part, he's ever played in front of. Wow. On a scale of, I'm gonna start using that.
A scale of Goo to Bakari.
Goo to Bakari Rambo. Wow. Goo Fudge. Okay. Where were we going here? What were we even talking about?
I think I'm still jet lagged.
I'm just hoping that my voice makes it through this. This is I got bad throat stuff. Long day of talking. BTS is coming up. We got Carl Lawson on this week.
Another guy I covered in recruiting.
Yeah, I love Carl Lawson. He's really good to talk to. And I think he's the current flavor of the week. Needs to be playing
more.
Needs
to be playing more, yeah.
Yeah, that's like everybody's on that right now. I mean, he's getting a lot of pressures. He's not getting home enough. They have him in this strictly third down, strictly passing situation role. You know, and Marvin kind of alluded to it yesterday. The way Kansas City gets the ball out so fast and running the RPO stuff, I think they felt it was more important to have guys that were long arms, taller, could get their hands in the passing lanes than it would be somebody who needs to go all the way around the edge to get home.
Like a Carlos Dunlap game.
Carlos, Michael.
Yeah, Michael.
Played a little. I mean, Michael didn't. He played like 45% or something, but Carl was down around 25 or I think about 30. I'm not sure exactly what that number ended up. But he, you know, he had a few pressures. But, I mean, ain't nobody getting home right now enough. But anyway, we'll talk about him. All right. Let's first, before we get it, you know what's best to do when you want to start talking about trade speculation with the trading deadline coming up? Crack a beer.
Oh, yeah.
Speculating on speculation is the stuff you do when you have a couple pops.
Need some speculation juice.
Speculation juice. And when you crack a beer, you know what that means? You need to get that 50 West. Sold at Paul Brown Stadium now. So you can get your Coast to Coast IPA down there. Some Doom Petals, if you like that Belgian White. Both delicious beers. Or you can head down to the Production Works. And you can get those drinks down there as well. News is upcoming on that. Very excited. I can't break. I'm going to break on the BBP too. The live show is happening. Coming back. We're coming back down. So I'm going to have, when we have Optimistic Bobby on the deuce, on the stepchild, we will tell you when and where and what the deal is going to be. So keep an eye out for that. Big news coming with 50 West. Excited to get back down there. Any excuse to get down there is one that I'm taking. Anyway. All right. Now that the speculation juice has been popped, let's talk a little bit about tight end trade speculation. Here's the deal. The Bengals have lost 5 tight ends this year somehow, which is just a number that doesn't even sound correct. Ryan Hewitt, when they cut him, to go with everybody else. Seathan Carter, who gets hurt in the last preseason game, who's going to be a huge part of special teams, and they really liked in that H-back role. And then Eifert, Croft, Schreck. Looks like Schreck's out for the year. Eifert, we know, is out for the year. Tyler Croft, muddled. His injury report is muddled right now as far as the fact that they made a move on Auden Tate to the practice squad instead of IRing Tyler Croft.
Maybe the timeline.
Tells you that they do not see him as out for the year yet, and that's sort of been suggested to me that they're not sure yet on what that is, and there's definitely thought that he'll be back this year. Oh, they're going to need him at some point. And I think any hope you can have of getting him back, you have to hold on to, because you know they're in a mess without him. So trading deadline is coming up. We saw our first deal. How about the Cowboys? Man. It's on my man of the week.
Yeah.
Man. What are you doing trading first-round picks for Amari Cooper? You know what? If the season ended today, that would be the number 9 overall selection.
Wow.
You can get John Ross with that.
Oh, come on.
He was the number 9 overall selection. You get Pat Mahomes with that. That makes it worse. That's insane.
Yeah.
Amari Cooper's okay. He's fine. He's a receiver. He's kind of been just a guy. And you're giving up a number 1? Wow.
I mean, I know that division has lanes to winning that aren't so difficult. But
you can't give up 1.
This is why the Cowboys have been the Cowboys through since
Jimmy Johnson left.
Yeah, since the mid-90s, doing things like this.
Everybody praises them. They ain't win crap either. They're the glorified Bengals. Since over the last 20 years.
Yep.
Compare the two. All right. Let's talk about. So if they're going to make a trade deadline coming up. You know, they have a lot of picks. And they're going to have, I think, 5-6 round picks next year, probably once the comps all play out. Plus the one they got for Bene Benwickery.
5-6 round picks.
Yeah. It's a lot. And plus their regular allotment. They're so young. They've had a ton of picks over the last 2 years. They just cannot take on another draft with a ton of picks. They have to compartmentalize a little bit and whittle those down. So they have a little bit of ammunition for a guy whether they would trade a 5 and then combine a couple of those 6s to move up to the 5th to keep themselves with a 5 or whatever. Let's talk about what some of the options really are.
You're going to leak some names? Float some names.
I'm going to float some names. We'll call it sourced, educated guessing. How about that?
Well, you know, you're an authority on speculation.
Yeah. Well, one, let's talk about, I mean, what they're going to do with the Mason Trek spot. Yeah. Jordan Franks. That's where we're at. It's where we're at. Undrafted free agent from this year, Jordan Franks. You know, he's a decent athlete. He's small. He could, I mean, he's like a poor man's Mason Trek, who was a poor man's Tyler Eifert. He was a poor man's Tyler Kroft. Tyler Kroft was a poor man's Tyler Eifert. So that's, we're getting pretty poor. So they could promote Jordan Frank. He's been here. He knows the system. Well,
he's been in the system. He's been in the locker room.
He's been around. So you, in theory, you could promote him. Now, remind you, they had a chance to promote a guy earlier, and rather than promote Jordan Franks, they pulled old Matt Langel off of the Houston practice squad. So you've got that. Or they can make a deal. What can you get for, you know, they're not going to give up one or two or three or probably even a 4. I don't see that being, they have had too much success with those picks, particularly those mid rounds in recent years, to say give up the potential of a future Carl Lawson, a future Geno Atkins, a future Sam Hubbard, a future Carlos Dunlap, a future Michael John, whatever. All these guys they've picked, Jesse Bates. They're not going to give up one of those for any of these, anybody that's available. So, you know, the Raiders are clearly sellers. Perhaps we should. I think we should start there.
It's the most likely. Well,
they're the most obviously selling, right, and turning everything over. So I think you'd be remiss not to give them a call. And they have a good tight end, Jared Cook, a veteran tight end. He's in the last year of his deal.
Tell me about that contract.
Very much digestible contract. $5 million. So you're paying about half of it. That's money you already have because you didn't have to pay Tyler Eifert the $3 million in bonuses. He could make plays for you this year. He'd clearly be a rental, but you need a rental. He's a good receiving tight end. He actually put up pretty big numbers the first quarter of the season. You could, because he's a rental, you could probably get him at a decent deal. I'd be curious to see what that is and what the asking price would be. He would be my first call.
Yeah, I think that's right. That, like you said, the rental aspect of it, contract coming off at the end of the year.
I mean, it's exactly what they need.
It fits exactly what they're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, they're not looking for some long-term answer. I mean, they may be looking for a long-term answer, considering that everybody they have is in contract years.
But not this method of answering that question.
I mean, Kroft, Eifert, Uzomah, all in the last year of their contract. If you're thinking about the future, I mean, that's why it wouldn't be crazy. Like, why not just start that clock now? I mean, are they really going to bring – I mean, you got to start to think about those decisions. Are you going to bring Eifert back? Do you want to re-sign Kroft? Because if you're not, maybe you just start thinking about that long-term answer. Now, maybe you do get crazy, which brings us to another option, which will be a little crazy. Charles Clay.
Okay. Didn't know which way. I didn't know where we were going, but now this contract is drastically different than the Jerry.
Yeah, I mean, it's $9 million and – all guaranteed this year, so you're taking on about half, $4.5 million. Again, I think they could handle that. Next year, you'd be paying him $9 million, and you really can't cut him. It was ranked one of the top, like, 10 worst contracts in the NFL earlier this year.
Not for Charles Clay.
No, that was not through the eyes of Charles Clay, who's loving life. But he's in Buffalo. I think clearly they should have given up on their season if they haven't already. I mean, Derek Anderson's starting a quarterback. They're a mess. You know, they would love to get that contract off the books. Are the Bengals going to pay a tight end like Charles Clay? They want to take – they don't do bad contracts. Not only do they not do bad contracts, they only do great contracts for them. So the idea of taking one on
seems to be a stretch.
It would be a stretch. It would be outside of what they typically do. I don't think they'd have a whole lot of interest in it, especially for a guy like Charles Clay, who is – meh. He's okay.
Just a guy.
He's maybe a skosh above just a guy. At times in his career, he's been just a guy. At times in his career, he's been better than that. So, and again, what are you going to give up? Because of the contract, you could probably just give up one of those sixes for Charles Clay, because they would love to get rid of that contract. And all the Bengals, and it's the Bill.
The Bills and they got
Bills and Bengals, best friends forever. So, that's an option. Here's a fun one, Bengals fans. Jermaine Gresham. Oh, man, Arizona sucks. Bring him in. Let him come back. The villain. Fences. The villain, man, the fences. Bengals fans love that. But at this point, he's better than your other options right now. He's an athlete. So Mercedes Lewis in Green Bay is not playing much. He is slow and older. There's a reason he's not playing much in Green Bay. I had somebody call him a glorified tackle eligible. but he is potentially available.
He's their third tight end right now.
Yeah, he's in the back of the room, yeah. I mean, they have Jimmy Graham, you know. So, I mean, he's a guy with experience. You know, he would, you know, he's not, he would be somebody. Probably experience more so than what you got. Staying in Oakland, Lee Smith, who is not a receiving tight end, but a pretty good block, been known to be a pretty good blocking tight end. Maybe you just go that route.
Warm body
athlete who can catch the ball a little bit. But definitely would help you in the run game too. So, to me, that's kind of a educated guess look at it. We'll see if they make a deal. They have till Tuesday the 30th to figure it out. But, I mean, it would take a couple weeks to get a guy in here. You have the bye week coming up. You know, that would essentially give you – maybe he couldn't play this week. But then you'd have 2 weeks to get him caught up on the system a little bit before you go into the game. Against New Orleans, and you can get him going up and going by the stretch run. And potentially then, if you ever got Tyler Kroft back, you could have CJ, traded guy, Tyler Kroft, and you could start doing those multiple tight end sets again and possibly recover from this. And you just need him to be a little bit of a bridge. So I would certainly be interested. I know the team is looking into it, but I don't know how serious they are about it, or if they just feel like they've just got to kind of play this
ride it out.
They got to just kind of ride it out. All right. Three questions. What do we got? Do we have are we enthused with our level of questions this
week?
Well,
I think we've answered quite a few of them.
Okay.
There's one that I really want to dig into.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, I didn't
know. What's the question? Who's our guy?
All right. My man John Brozart.
Okay, John Brozart.
Since I'm a Georgia guy, me.
Yes.
In honor of the game this weekend, best story from the world's largest cocktail party.
Ooh.
Okay, I've got three.
First of all, you can't call it that anymore.
That's what I'll always call it.
Yeah.
I've got three. I'll tell them briefly. The first time I went down there, I was working for the student newspaper. Remember my man Tyler Estep? I probably shouldn't use names.
Oh, you dropped the first and last.
I'll just say that we ended up in a pool at like 3 a.m. and somebody stole all of his clothes. Mm-hmm. And so we were walking around one of those like Days Inn. We were at like a Days Inn or something. You know, like where the hotel doors are on the outside. And somebody had stolen them. Shoes and all, I believe. Or no, they left the shoes.
What?
Basically owned them.
Wow.
Yeah, it was rough, man. So that was one.
How did the rest...
I didn't lose my clothes, so yeah. I wasn't so upset.
Yeah, you're right.
For a bed. So I had a bed in a hotel room down there. I decided that if I got two Miller Lights, the rest of my night was going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up having to sleep on a floor because of that for two nights. That's like, I'm the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah. I traded one Miller Light per night for my bed. And slept on a floor with a towel.
I will trade you my bed for one Miller Lite
per night. I ended up sleeping with a towel underneath me and a towel or one of those like brown in the closet blankets that every bad hotel comes with.
Wow.
Terrible trade. I'm the Jerry Jones of beer
trades.
Your bed
was Amari Cooper. Oh, that's great.
And then the last story I'll tell, there was a player for Georgia. I'm not going to use his name. I can't remember if he got ejected from the game or what, but we went down to the landing, not go back with the team, and we did a bunch of shots with him.
Hey, how about that?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Special teams guy, but he was already at a 10. The game was probably over at 7:30. We got up with him about 9, and he was already at a 10 on the rage.
Wow.
Because Georgia had won.
That's fantastic. You never know quite what you're going to run into. I always find the walk in to be pretty hysterical because you have to park so far away and you walk through that like World's Fair or their little county fair, whatever the heck that thing is. And people are just going bonkers in the parking lots. And you just never know what the hell you're going to see.
Well,
and everyone's sad that they're in Jacksonville.
I was about to say Jacksonville.
Yeah. No one wants to be in Jacksonville.
Anyway.
McCarron guy with a question at Bearded Bengal. I like that he's calling himself McCarron guy. That means he's a loyal BBP-er. Where's Malik Jefferson? Also, has Evans been the best linebacker for us this year? Boy, it's hard to find somebody. I guess the best of best of the lot is a hard one to – I guess that's good. Malik Jefferson – was really bad in preseason and lost always preseason and in the last preseason game he gave some glimmers of hope that maybe he could figure some stuff out when they were playing against the used car salesman for Indy. But I mean, like, you know, he was really lost and didn't seem to have much of an understanding for what was going on. And to the point that they were wondering, like, how big of a – is this guy already a bust?
Mm-hmm. Requirements for our – has he had enough snaps for us to be able to put him in there with Preston? And
Evans has been okay.
He's been okay.
I mean, he hasn't been great, but none of them have really been great. So I guess maybe. I don't know. I know who it ain't.
Yes. That's another question, and – doesn't need to be one of our three, but somebody asked if Tez is still great. They said he's not been good, which I agree with.
Oh, he's not been good. No, he's not been good.
I That's all we need to say.
What did we say? What did we say last week? It's Kanye.
Yep. The music's got to stay.
The music is not good. To be able to continue to put up with wanting to read or care about this guy, the music needs to be good, and the music's bad.
Yeah, my
music was
bad.
Oh, there's a good group. There's a good group.
I think Dennis is plugging a book, and he got a photo out there.
The red hat.
He was not. He was pretty low key. Looked like he was wearing black sweats, black sweater. Just, you know.
All right. Well, we need to bet on something. Do you have a gut about the Bucks game?
I'm not as rigid about you. You're feeling a pretty strong performance from the Bengals this week.
Yeah.
I think they'll win. I need
double
to see.
Digits.
Ooh, we might differ.
I'll say double digits. I'll call double digits.
I'm thinking.
I mean, the Vegas. What is the line? Do we know the line yet?
I don't. It should be out. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's.
I bet it's
here,
like five.
Yeah. I would. If I was trying to guess the line, this is good. This is a good
guess
exercise.
Line.
Guess the line.
5.5 is what I'm guessing.
I'll say 4.5. I think it could be 4.5. Just because I think they're giving Tampa Bay some credit. For having some sense of life after their big wins. 4.5 should have been our tiebreaker on the rib off.
I think that I'm taking the Bengals to win by 7.
So I will give you it'll be more than a one possession victory.
All right, I'll take that.
Front end of next week.
It's an opportunity for me to be called out for pessimism.
Well, you're still saying that they were going to cover.
That's right.
You're still saying winning a cover. I mean, how much? What do you got to do?
Well, I might be shifted to a Randy Bullock field goal late.
You might be, depending on how this week goes.
We'll see. I need to know more about the leadership.
Tell me, was there a closed door meeting? Did they close the doors or open them?
Was there yelling?
Was if they yell, they care.
It's on.
All right, so that wraps us up here on the BBP. Did we get to everything? I think we did. My list is complete here.
We didn't have to talk about missed tackles. We don't need to talk about that.
No, we talked.
Oh, we did?
You saw them. Well, we talked about on the walkout.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about that.
People saw them, and it's really sad.
Right. Is whenever we've already answered the questions. And
it
makes
feels good.
Yeah, it makes me feel
now,
like
we're I appreciate it. And we should really start to get to some more of these on the deuce, too.
Yeah.
We can try to run through some of these. Because I do feel like we often aren't able to get to everything because,
because of Kanye and all this stuff.
Well, we got to do this day in Kanye.
Goo Fudge.
We got to get to Goo Fudge. Can't believe that.
I might have made that up, but I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty.
It comes out that potentially that was not true at all.
I want to run. I'm gonna
somebody get Bakari or Emma on the phone.
I'm gonna start doing things like that on the BBP, and you have to say if it's real or a lie.
Is it? I like that. I like that. Well, is Fletcher lying about a fact? I mean, you made it
facts.
Very believable. Yeah, because
who just changes their name?
Yeah, and who it could possibly be called? All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the BBP. BTS with Carl Lawson. Check that out this week. We'll have some more of that for you on Thursday on The Stepchild. And pick up your Inquirer Bengals app. Don't forget that. Listen to that. So Cincinnati, getting close 2 weeks to midterms. So lots going on. Anyway, thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you.